What is this that I can see with eyes and taking hold on me? I am dead.
Hi there. What you are about to hear is the first episode of Black Devil Mountain, which is a pretty unique thing for us here at Grizzly Peaks Radio. It is the first Patreon backer game that we've ever run, and it's been wonderful. And rather than putting it on the Patreon exclusive, which was my intention initially, I've decided I'd like to release the first two episodes here on the main channel so that everyone can hear the goodness, the wonderfulness of Black Devil Mountain. There are 5 episodes in total, and the other 3 will be only on the Patreon, but I wanted to give you all a taste as a little treat because it has been so much fun. Anyway, enjoy.
Fix your feet so you can't walk. I lock your jaw so you can't talk. Close your eyes so you can't see this very...
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Yeah, so this is something quite special, and it's something I've been really looking forward to and quite excited, nay, a bit nervous about even, because this is our first ever recording. Hopefully it'll be of good enough quality to be put up there alongside the canon, with the canon. But either way, this will be recorded and distributed in some fashion. It's our first ever Patreon game, Patreon backer game. So I have the great pleasure of introducing and welcoming two of our most devoted and devout backers, Dave and Andy. There was going to be a third, another Dave, but unfortunately he had to drop out at the last minute, but hopefully we'll get him in. So hi, Dave and Andy. Do you want to just say hello and introduce yourselves?
Hello, I'm Andy, and tonight I will be playing Reginald Goddard, who is a GP, an English GP, who has come over to America for reasons.
For reasons. We'll find out what those reasons are, won't we? Yes, looking forward to that.
I'm Dave, and I'm going to be playing Roger Noseworthy, who also came over to USA, originally from Canada, but then had to come further, more cloudy circumstances, moved him back to USA. So.
Yes, and he has an interest in ancient artifacts, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, he has some skills in archaeology, but he doesn't actually like to make sure they get to a museum. He likes to make sure they get to potential patrons or ones who love them for money.
It belongs in my pocket.
That's the one.
Yes, indeed. Well, the sort of people of dubious morality are just a staple of Call of Cthulhu, so I think that's absolutely fine. Well, Dave and Andy, it's great to have you here, and I wanted to thank you in person, really, for supporting us and the podcast in general.
You're welcome. It's great.
We couldn't do it without you. I mean, technically we could, but you make it a hell of a lot easier to keep the thing going. And not just because you back us, but also because just knowing that people actually like what we do is the kind of reward. And it really is gratifying and lovely. But joining you are two of our seasoned veterans, although one of them probably will not be known to anyone yet. Or actually, by the time this goes out, probably. Anyway, I don't know, because we're talking about the future now. But I want to introduce everyone to Jen, who, for those of you that are living in the future and have listened to episodes 32 onwards of Two-Headed Serpent, Jen has joined our Two-Headed Serpent campaign and plays an awesome character called Bernadette. And tonight, who are you playing, Jen?
Tonight I'm playing Martha Koenig, and she's a private investigator with the Swan Detective Agency operating out of Burlington, Vermont.
And we have decided that you will have to be the harsh critic of my attempted New England accent, which will not be a New England accent of any type that you've ever heard before. So go easy on me, Jen.
I'm going to be very harsh on you, and punishments will be forthcoming.
Okay, fair enough. And last but not least is one of the stalwarts who appeared in episode 1 of Grizzly Peaks Radio way back in, well, actually, it was broadcast a long time before that, but episode 1 was in 2020, in September 2020, in episode 1 of King in Yellow. It's the one and only Archie McArchie.
Yes, yes, indeed. Tonight I'll be playing a Frederick Salou, lately back from Rhodesia and finding London is not quite up to my standards. I'm traveling the world looking for the darkness, looking for the wild places of the earth, and found myself here in Maine.
Hoping to bag some big game, yes? Is that right?
Perhaps. I've brought my elephant gun. We'll see what comes into my sights.
Yep. never say that Archie min-maxes. He plays it by the book. He just happens to have an elephant gun with him at all times. Now, we are going to be playing tonight, of course, as you probably will know from the title of the podcast episode. We're playing Black Devil Mountain, which is, I hesitate to call it a classic. It's certainly old. It's 40 years old, literally, to the day, probably, because it was released in 1982 and has been re-released as part of the 40th anniversary edition that Chaosium just put out. And actually, I tell a lie, 1983, it's only 39 years old, but it's part of the 40th anniversary pack. And it is a classic in the sense that it's so old that they didn't really know how to write Call of Cthulhu scenarios from that back then. And without wishing to spoil anything, if you do eventually listen to the whole thing, go and listen to Seth Skorkowski's review of it. Because essentially, he says, it's pretty terrible, but at the heart, there's a really good scenario. They just didn't quite know how to. So I will do my damnedest to turn sow's purse into a silk ear. That's my new version of the phrase, a sow's purse into a silk ear. And so we will start. And what we will start with is with Reginald Goddard. In perhaps a week or so prior to the very beginning of the scenario, Reginald will be reading out a letter, a rather sad letter that he has received from a lawyer called Horace Cobb. Now, of course, you will probably, it'll probably be so small you won't be able to read it. But if you're having problems reading it, let me know and I can read it myself. But I think it looks pretty clear to me.
No, I can read it.
Can you read it? So, Andy, yeah, would you care to read this letter out as if you're reading it to yourself, I suppose, really?
Okay. Posts here. All right, let's see what we have. Cobb, Lichter and Burns, attorneys at law. Oh, attorneys. That's worrying. Cobb Building, Jonesport, Maine, 12th of February. Dear sir. Sorrowfully, I must inform you of the death of your brother. Oh, my God, no. Mr. Albert Goddard had a poetical eye and a generous spirit, and we are the poorer for his loss. Well, I hope that you shall accept both the firm's and my personal condolences. I know how grievous such news must be. His body has been temporarily interred, pending your instructions for final disposal. Small fees involved of $47.29. I wonder what that is in real money. Can be deferred until final disposition of estate, if so desired. You are now the sole remaining Goddard named in the will of Wesley Waterman. Please peruse the enclosed documents and respond at your earliest convenience to each of the matters as you may. We will be happy to continue as attorneys of record for the aforesold estate, as we did for your brother and uncle. All matters pertaining to the sale of this land can be performed by our firm without your presence unless you wish otherwise. Our little corner of Maine must seem far away. That seems a bit light-hearted for this sort of letter. I await your reply and hope that the association with our film will be of help in easing your burden of grief. Well, yes, I suppose. If there is anything further you need, please let me know. All of us are happy to assist you in any way possible. Cordially something, Mr. Cobb, Esquire. Enclosures, death certificate, bill of holding, Joseph Watery, statement of account. Oh, and a deed to the Crowfoot Farm property.
Oh, that's really good.
Well, there you go. Do you shed a tear? You sort of breeze through that pretty quickly. The only bit that you got held up was the $47 bit, I seem to observe.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, it's all very tragic. I'm curious about this deed, though. I mean, I don't know. I've not really been in touch with him for a while.
I will now show you some of the other objects that you have been handed. The bill of holding.
Yes, a transportation of corpse. Maine State Board of Health, yada, yada, yada. Yes, it's pending. He's in the mortuary. Okay, that all seems perfectly clear.
Misadventure.
Yeah, actually, that's an interesting point. He is in Jonesport Mortuary. So maybe that'll be your first port of call. Then, of course, there is the bill.
Blah, blah. Cash expenditures, temporary casket. Well, that'll probably do. McClure's Mortuary Services. Fine. Yes, that's grand.
Yeah, he's in a cardboard box. Just shove him in the ground. So there's your bill of goods, bill of holding, yeah, 47. And then I suppose, I'm not going to show you the death certificate yet because it's a very messy document. But what we'll do is we'll have you on a train. So we'll move time forward with you arriving on a train to Jonesport to meet Horace Cobb.
Sort out the estate. All
sort out the estate, exactly. You don't want to leave in the hands of some dodgy lawyer, do you?
No, not at all.
So we'll have all four of you Now, whether or not Frederick has Captain Salou has introduced himself and is part of the group at this point, I'll leave it up to you. But let's have all four of you on a train chugging its way up the main coast towards Jonesport for an afternoon rendezvous with Horace Cobb, Esquire. So you're on the train. It's puffing away up the gentle inclines, and the weather is getting colder and chillier as you head further away from the coast. And yeah, you're all on this train. And Frederick, let us know now, are you part of the party yet, or are you just watching these three interesting characters from across the carriage?
Of course, no, we connected instantly when I get on this train. Certainly there aren't many passengers on their way to this desolate and remote area of the United States. I was comforted to meet two other members who defended the British Empire during the Great War, and I connected with them instantly. And, you know, if they would have a gentleman adventurer tagging along with them, I really don't have a strict itinerary for this trip, so if you would indulge an old man, I would very much be interested in finding out what is in this area of the world.
Moose, I should think.
Well, that's quite a large animal, is it?
You'll need your elephant gun, for sure. And can you run fast?
I fear my legs have abandoned me, although I did a fair bit of running up until maybe 10 years ago. I'm not as spry as I used to be, but I think I can manage.
It's rutting season, so shoot straight.
I'm familiar with the rutting season for the elephants in Rhodesia. I think I'll be able to manage.
The wildebeest.
Roger coughs a puff of smoke out at that and kind of looks around and rutting season, I think. What have you brought me along for this? This doesn't sound like antiquities to me.
Well, I mean, we're not here to interfere with the wildlife in any way, I would have thought.
Excellent.
But, I mean, if our friend here wishes to go and shoot a moose or a... Is this where Bigfoot comes from? I've heard tell of thing with a Bigfoot. Just one Bigfoot. Apparently. But yes, I don't know. But no, we're not here specifically for the hunting. And I think there might be valuables that I don't require that my brother may have left. But I do not know yet, so we shall find out.
I hear for many American men it is rutting season most of the year.
I have heard that, yes.
How big is this estate that I have a deed to, my old friend?
Well, that is what Mr. Cobb is going to inform us of. It's quite a trip. I hope it's not just like a shed or a shack or something. That would be dreadful.
The irony of that will not be lost on you shortly.
Were you long estranged from your brother?
We hadn't really been in touch in some years. There was an incident with my not-lamented ex-wife, Nessie, yes.
Oh, don't mention his ex-wife. Don't mention his ex-wife.
Oh, no, you would probably get a rant, I'm afraid. But, oh, awful woman. Still bolts.
So, lovely bit of scene setting there for these four. And after several hours chugging its way up the main coast, you pull into Jonesport. And you're actually met on the platform by a short, balding man, probably in his 50s, wearing spectacles. He's dressed severely in a grey pinstripe suit. He's carrying a small black leather briefcase and shivering against the cold because the snow has indeed started to fall. Winter seems to have come early to Maine. And as you disembark from the train and you get your suitcases and luggage down and a porter helps you down to the platform, he's looking up and down the line of passengers getting off the train and his eyes then fall upon you and he sort of looks at you as if to indicate some kind of recognition. And I think he realizes that you are indeed Reginald Goddard. And he walks over briskly, taking careful steps to avoid slipping over in the gathering snow, and reaches out a gloved hand to shake you by the hand, Reginald.
Hello, Goddard, Reginald Goddard, yes. You, I presume, must be Mr. Cobb or his agent.
Yes, I thought so, yes. I'm Cobb, Horace Cobb, attorney at law. You've brought some companions, I see, here for the weather?
He looks up.
Yes, indeed. No, this is my companions, yes. One of them is here to do some hunting.
I'm quite keen to see a moose.
Well, plenty of moose up in the mountains there, but no, we have more important business than wildlife, although it is interesting you mentioned that. After all, your brother was taken to pieces somewhat by a bear.
What? Oh, dear.
Yes, you see, there's some rather aggressive grizzlies up in the hills here, and, well, it seems like he got on the wrong end of one.
Maybe you should change your target, my friend.
Any experience with bears, Mr. Frederick?
I have brought back many trophies in my time, and bears are one of them. Fear not of any bear while I am in your party.
Roger here, he's here to do some valuing and general kind of, he's an antiquities expert. And Miss Koenig here, Martha, she's here to help with any legal issues that we may have, or indeed local things with locals, because I don't understand your local customs and the like.
Well, I hardly think you'd need another legal expert on the case.
I'm more of a go-between, our dear Mr. Goddard and the local constabulary. I don't really trust these small-town police forces. Has there been an investigation into this death?
Miss Koenig, I don't know where exactly you come from. You seem like you might be from this part of the world. I take a slight offense at you making implications that we don't know how to run our business around here. It seems a little bit forward of you, miss.
Well, I'm just trying to get at the truth.
Well, the truth is very simple. Albert was killed by a grizzly. Plenty of them up here, and I don't care what the locals say. There was nothing strange about it whatsoever.
What the locals say?
Oh, you know, superstitions and all that kind of nonsense. Well, let's take the local branch line train up to Indian River, and I'll explain everything as we go.
More trains?
More trains, yes. It's a train kind of country around here.
Oh, yes.
This is train country.
Much as I like a train, I hope the seats are more comfortable than that other train.
No, that was a luxury train you're on. We're going on the local clanker. That's going to be rattling your bones all the way up to Indian River, just you see.
There's no first class by chance.
First class? Oh, well, you're a fancy one, aren't you? No.
Oh, what? That went the way of the Pullman cars.
I must agree with you.
And he says, well, there's no porter for this one. You're going to have to carry your own bags, I'm afraid. Come on. And he turns briskly and heads to the other platform where the local connecting train is waiting, a smaller gauge train to take you up to Indian River.
He seems to be a lawyer, all right.
And he sits down, and he finds an empty compartment and gestures for you all to sit down. And he says, now, I trust Mr. Reginald that we can talk candidly in front of these people.
Of course, yes, absolutely.
Yes, well, you know, I have to be careful about these kind of things. Not everyone wants their dirty laundry exposed for all to see.
Laundry?
He said, oh, just a turn of phrase. There really was nothing peculiar, really, about Albert's death.
Other than being eaten by a grizzly bear.
Well, I mean, unusual, yes. Peculiar, no. I mean, you get in the way of a hungry grizzly around here, well, that's only going to end one way. He says, looking at Frederick's elephant gun.
Captain Salou gives a knowing look. One must be careful around such beasts.
I think I should have brought my rifle with me, Reginald, but I did not know this was the type of adventure you were bringing me on.
Yeah, I have my service pistol, my trusty Webley.
Excellent.
Had to stow it in my luggage.
So he hands you over the death certificate, and he says, well, it's very simple. The coroner did an initial review of the body, and although it can't be completely certain, possibly a bear, he says, if you see on item 21 there. You know, I know Mr. Blumenthal very well. He's a very precise man, knows his business. I would take his word. I mean, when he says possibly a bear, to my mind, he means he's pretty sure it was a bear, but until you can verify these things, it's, you know, better to hedge your bet a little bit.
Trauma from external forces. So, misadventure. Cause unknown, unnatural. Possibly bear. Exit pursued by bear.
Well, what you have to understand, Mr. Goddard, is when we say unnatural, it means he didn't die of a heart attack or fell down a hole or that kind of thing. Got stricken down by the fever. That's what we mean by unnatural. Nothing odd about that when we say that, just so you
is
know.
Is that the case, Miss Koenig? As I say, a foreigner in a strange land here.
You know, there's a lot of suspiciously specific denials that are happening here. When you say it's probably a bear, what are people saying that it could be?
Well, I mean, Miss Koenig, this is pure superstition and folk tales from the locals. I wouldn't put much stock in it if I were you.
Folk tales? These are Mainers, sir. They're not backwoods holler residents. This is New England. These are Protestants. What sorts of folk tales are you talking about?
You know, when I was in the Zambezi, if I didn't put any stock in what the locals were saying, I would not have survived.
quite right, Mr.
I don't know much about the Zambezi, but Miss Koenig, what you're talking about, sophisticated folk living in the coastal cities, you ain't talking about the folk that live up on Black Devil Mountain. You know, that's a whole different culture up there. You got to understand.
Oh, like people from Manchester. Northerners.
Maybe.
Black Devil Mountain. Does anybody know any other... Reginald, have you heard of this Black Devil Mountain or Mr. Cobb? Know any history of this area?
Well, they say that the land around that area has had a bad reputation for centuries. Even the local Indian tribes who once inhabited it refused to walk its slopes. But like I say, pure superstition. There ain't nothing to it. You gotta understand that.
Well, it's a rather grim event, and we could use a little amusement after our rattling around on a train for a while. Humor me with what the locals are saying happened.
Well, I mean, it all depends on how you look at things. The fact that a dozen hunters have been mauled and disappeared and died on that mountain over the last few years is just coincidence, I reckon. Nothing much to it other than just bad luck.
Were these experienced hunters?
Probably, but don't matter how experienced you are. If an angry, hungry grizzly bear comes up on you while you're bivouacking down for the night, you ain't going to put up much of a fight, I don't reckon.
Could this be the Bigfoot I was talking about?
Bigfoot? Well, look, I don't know much about Bigfoot, but they do say you hear this strange fluting music. Like someone blowing an old pipe up there.
Like highfalutin, like Schubert.
No, more like, like engine music, something like that. But I think this is just people hearing the high mountain winds blowing through a crevice or a creek or a gorge and thinking they're hearing music. It ain't nothing. There ain't nothing to it, I can assure you.
Just the lonely call of the loon, then.
Indeed it is. Now, Miss Koenig, you're absolutely right. That mountain is full of loons.
Quite.
Now, you mentioned Indians before. Do Indians still inhabit this area?
Oh, God, no, not for many a year now. Maybe some descendants of them, that kind of thing, but no, the local tribes have, let's say they found other accommodations, as most did in these parts. A little bit of historical commentary there.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Well, I believe our train will be arriving very shortly, so while we're here, I guess I better show you the deed. After all, that's...
Yes, that might be... He's sort of like clapping his hands on his thighs. Try not to look overly excited about this.
He's got the stamp. So basically, yes, the estate and interest. Estate of Wesley Waterman, deceased. The original deed was 1789, reaffirmed by the deed of 1814 and 1886. And he reads out, yes, this indenture, drawn up on the first day of November 1919 between the estate of Wesley Waterman, deceased, and the village of Indian River in the state of Maine, of the first part, and Albert Goddard of the city of Augusta in the state of Maine. Well, in consideration sum of $0, it was bequeathed as an inheritance. This deed hereby grants, bargains, sell, and convey to the said party of the second part, his heirs and assigns, the following described real estate in the county of Washington, the state of Maine, and in the village of Indian River, and bounded and described as follows. Here you go. This is the bit you want to hear. 640 acres. That's no mean piece of land there, mister. 640 acres of farm and unimproved land, beginning at mile 12 of the Indian River Road, and bounded on the east by Indian River, on the south by Mason's Bay Road, and extending to the north 3/4 of a mile, and to the west by Downey's Lot, including all hunting and mineral rights. Oh, yes, I didn't mention that. There may well be gold in those hills. But anyway, moving on, hunting and mineral rights, and otherwise including the cabin situated a mile and a half west of the Indian River.
Cabin?
Yes.
I thought this was an estate, Reginald.
I think it's perhaps quite fortuitous that we found each other on the train. May I take advantage of your hunting rights on your property?
Yes, you can.
Yes, you see, well, of course, the copy, this warranty deed was taken on the 6th of February 1922, and I guess I didn't really explain fully. The land, of course, is substantial. The property is a little bit basic, one would say. It is more of a hunting cabin than a grand villa, let us say.
Oh, so when you say hunting cabin, do you mean a wood hut?
Well, no, I think there's 4 rooms. It's more than a hut.
Okay.
There's no indoor plumbing, though. There's an outside facilities for that kind of business.
Rustic and charming.
A fixer-upper, I think you call that.
Yes, but, Mr. Goddard, that land with the mineral rights and the hunting rights,
Well, I mean, we have a huntsman here. He might be able to advise. Mr. Salou?
Oh, yes, certainly. And come, man, don't be soft. Did you not serve in the war?
Yes.
Yes, this reminds me of the times behind the trenches. 20 miles, of course, behind the trenches.
This was exactly what I was looking for when I left and came to this place.
Oh, well, at least one of us has luck.
A chance to go back into the wilderness.
Well, I guess we should make the best of it there, Reginald.
Yes, well, mind you, gold, Roger, gold.
Yes, very true. Mr. Cobb, is there any ancient sites, possibly, or whoever was doing the rites or the prospecting in these areas?
Well, of course, I'm not entirely familiar with the town myself and the locale, but there is one other thing. I'd been hesitant somewhat to quite hand it over to you up to this point. Of course, I always was going to, but I just wanted to make sure you had all the facts straight before I gave it to you, Mr. Goddard, because it's actually a letter from your brother that we recovered from the cabin where his body was sadly discovered.
The bear was in the cabin with him.
No, I'm misleading you. His body was found outside the cabin, but he was staying up there at that point, perhaps trying to assess the structural integrity of the building. And and that must have been when the bear got him. Maybe he was wandering around late at night or in the early hours and wasn't armed or anything. Actually, no, I think he might have been. Well, anyway, the bear just got him, but he actually had a half-written letter that he was going to send to you, Mr. Goddard.
Oh.
I have it here, in fact. And he pulls out an envelope, unsealed envelope, and he hands it to you. And inside are a couple of sheets of paper. And if you care to read them...
Crowfoot Farm, General Delivery, Indian River, Maine, 28th of December. Hello, dear Reginald. Well, that's not like him. Christmas has passed and the new year looms before us. Season's greetings to Mary, Arthur, little Pam. I can never remember her name. It's bloody Vanessa, isn't it? And all my friends at the firehouse. I miss them all dearly. I must relate to you the odd things which have happened since I refurbished the cabin on Uncle Waterman's land. The area is beautiful, but with elm, oak, birch, and other trees in profusion. Wild blackberry, holly, and some wild pumpkins. I have discovered in my daily walks about the mountain that land is on. I really love it here. It's so peaceful and serene. But do you know that when the Downeasters that drew the store, Indian River, found out that I was the new owner of the land and that they planned to live on it, well, they all up and left the store. Even the Keep Alvin Hodges seemed upset. In fact, he said I shouldn't be staying there as if it were a dark and evil place. I was never so flabbergasted in my whole life. When I pressed him, he would not say another word except that he was closing up his store at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. What a lazy blighter. And that I wouldn't be able to buy my food and other supplies there any longer. I was so angry. Went right over to Sheriff Beauchamp's office and demanded to know what in blue blazes was going on. He shocked me. He as much as agreed with the others and went on to tell me that no one hereabouts goes anywhere near that mountain. Most especially the southeast slopes, which is where the cabin is. When I went on about not being able to buy supplies at store, he told me that it was a free country, ain't no man gotta sell nothing if he didn't feel like it. No law against him being ornery, were his exact words. I was so mad I couldn't speak. I've been going to Addison 6 or 7 miles away from his supplies since.
Great, that's a really good letter. Poor old Albert, he has not had a good time. Well, he didn't have a good time and then he died. And then the lawyer says, well, I can't talk for the hospitality of the local folk. It does seem mighty strange that they wouldn't sell supplies to your brother, but of course we read the letters, and well, the second one is somewhat different. You'll see if you read it out.
Okay. 29th December. I stopped writing last night to bring in some more firewood. It has been very cold since the snow stopped 2 days ago. I was bringing in an armload when I heard the same sounds I'd been hearing on and off for the past 4 or 5 evenings. How I wish that I had once again only listened. From a distance came an odd chant of song in some language I did not recognize. It sounded Indian, except I could hear what sounded like a fiddle as well, and I've never seen an Indian play a fiddle. Anyway, my curiosity got the better of me and off I went to see. I certainly did not want a band of gypsies or some such encamped on my land. I grabbed my Holland and Holland double barreled, you know, the beauty I brought over from England after I emigrated, the beauty you stole, grabbed a dozen shells, strapped on the snowshoes and set off. Though the singing had stopped, I had heard it was enough to have a pretty good idea where it came from. So upslope I went, ready for anything, from bear to vagabond, but not for what I saw.
What I found, I must tell you, dear brother, has left my heart cold and my brain besmirched with fear. I climbed more than halfway up the mountain, straight away from the cabin in the northwest direction. There, in a place I hadn't seen before, I saw and heard things that shook my soul. Maybe the ravings of our dear Uncle Waterman were not the product of liquor and loneliness. I had read his journals, his crazed ideas about an ancient cursed book he discovered on the mountain. Now, after reading it, he hid it again. Maybe he had seen what I have seen. Do you believe in the devil? Now you must. I have beheld him in his dark glory, and I am sore afraid. Even now I can hear that eerie piping, that cold and gold of the godless chant seeming to snatch the marrow from my bones. But let me tell you exactly what I saw tonight. I must tell.
And that's all he wrote, I'm afraid.
He doesn't imply it's a bear, Mr. Cobb.
Well, I mean, it seems like, well, dare I say it, if you don't mind me saying, he sounds like he possibly was losing his marbles at that point. Look, I don't want to make you think any less of him, but maybe the loneliness and being up there on the mountain and the cold, maybe he was seeing things and, you know, it's easy to kind of get a bit snowblind up there.
I have to say, your customer service is lacking.
Well, he is a lawyer.
Very true, Miss Koenig.
Frederick, a question for you. Do bears, these type of bears, eat people? Like, were these corpses, do we know if the, sorry, my friend Reginald, was the body eaten? Do bears do that, or do they just kill and move onwards?
I am ashamed to say that I'm quite unfamiliar with the fauna of this area of the world. I certainly have heard tales of bears eating people, especially in the winter when they're desperate for food. However, it is also told that bears hibernate, so much of this is very strange. And much of this reminds me of my time in Rhodesia, and I am most excited to see what the areas around this cabin hold for us.
Now, before we go speculating on all kinds of fancies, I am no expert on these things neither, but there is a fellow that I can introduce you to who I came across when I was passing through drawing up the deeds. His name's Black Tom, a local hunter. He'll know all about these kind of things. I'm sure he'll be more than grateful to lend a hand and give you any advice you might need.
Okay. Any local knowledge is always useful.
Tom was this gentleman's name?
Indeed. I don't know what his last name is. They just call him Black Tom. He's, well, a colourful character, you'll find. But, well, once I've, I suppose, accompanied you to Indian River, I'll have to be heading back to Jonesport and back down to the offices in Olympia. But you can always reach me via telegram or even one telephone if you can get your hands on one, if you wish to ask any more questions. But to be frank, this is about the beginning and end of it for me. I trust, Mr. Goddard, that you have found everything to be to your satisfaction.
Well, I suppose, yes. Cabin, you say?
Well, that's pretty much par for the course up here, especially up on that mountain.
Well, we shall make the most of it.
So you arrive a little while later in the tiny little hill town, hill village of Indian River. And there is a map. I don't know how useful it'll be, because it's really just one road with a few. It's actually, I think it's an original map from somewhere. But yeah. There's really just one road and a little side road heading off to a couple of buildings off on the east side of the river. But it's a tiny little village, and the train pulls in at the station, which isn't, I don't exactly know where that is on the map, but it does. And Horace accompanies you out onto the main street, and he says, "Now, given the lateness of the hour, I suppose you'll be wanting to find accommodation for the night. I'm sure it's a bit, weather is certainly not amenable for you heading up to the cabin right now."
I think that might be a good idea. What do you think?
Yes, certainly. I don't wish to climb a mountain at this time of the night.
No. I think that would be unwise, especially if there's bears.
Yes. Well, as I said, perhaps we can go to the local hostelry. It's not exactly a hotel, I don't think, but they probably have some rooms that they can rent to you. And I imagine you've got a fairly good chance of meeting Black Tom there.
Very good. Where would we be going? The drink hole.
Excellent plan.
The drinking hole. The local watering hole. So, yeah, so he leads you down the street a little way, and there is a small cantina or tavern or, I suppose, yeah, pretty much the only joint in town. Because the rest are small houses, and there's a church, perhaps. I mean, obviously, there'd be a church. But, yeah, he leads you into the bar and has a quiet word with the proprietor. And he says, "Well, I guess this is it then. Very pleased to meet all of you. I take it the settlement, Mr. Goddard, will be wired over the next day or so. Would you agree?
Yes, yes. I shall write you a check now.
Oh, very good.
Write a check. Me bounce, but...
And his eyes light up and he says, this is a check in pounds sterling. I take it we'll be able to cash this check.
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm sure you will.
Okay. Well, very good, sir. Well, look, if you need any more of our services, you know where to reach me. And he hands you his...
Yes, it's fine. You best go or you'll miss your train.
And he hands you a business card and he says, yes, that train seems to just come up once a day and goes back down 20 minutes later. So, yep, I better be heading. He waves you off and you are there standing in this quiet saloon, sawdust on the floor, the wind rattling the windows as the evening draws in. And there's a surly looking barman there serving at the bar. He kind of grunts at you as if he's waiting to get your order.
Martha heads up to the bar and asks for a scotch, please. And have you made the acquaintance of an individual by the name of Black Tom?
Well, yeah, Black Tom. He'll be in, and he looks at his watch, probably about 20 minutes. He's normally propping up that end of the bar by now, but maybe he got caught doing some outside work.
Outside work? What sort of outside work?
Well, he's a woodsman.
Oh, just cutting down trees then? At this time of the evening?
No, he's not a lumberjack. No, just wildlife.
Oh, he's a poacher.
No. The hunting rights are, well, especially up on the mountain there, seem to be a bit vague.
Is it common for the woodsmen around here to go out this time of night to observe the fauna?
I can't answer for Black Tom, but when he's in, you can ask him about his habits.
I'm a bit of a naturalist myself, and if he's out there, perhaps I can go and find him and discuss shop, perhaps.
Well, mister, I wouldn't go getting your shoes wet on account of Black Tom. He'll be in a few minutes. Why don't you sit yourselves down? I'll pour you out a round of whiskies.
In that case, perhaps it's best we get a bottle.
Absolutely. Now, we can rustle you up some food if you're hungry.
Oh, well, I've been traveling all day, I suppose. What can you offer?
Well, nothing much. Corned beef and boiled cabbage.
Spam?
That'll do for me.
Spam.
I'll stick with a liquid diet tonight, thank you.
I'll just have some bread and butter, please. I don't like this corned beef.
Luxury.
Oh, well, if you want butter on your bread, maybe you need to be heading back to Jonesport. We ain't that fancy up here.
You see any cows around here?
Lard, then. Butter, bread, and lard. I don't know.
Maybe moose butter.
Moose butter?
Bear grease. We got bear grease. You can spread that.
That'll do.
Bear grease. Interesting.
I have to say, these colonials, they have the strangest diet.
Well, don't lump us all in with the Mainers. My goodness.
Tell me, sir, did you serve in the war?
Who, me?
No, I'm sorry, Reginald. I was speaking to Reginald.
Yes, a medic. Yes,
I tell you, there were days where we were happy to have bear grease on some crackers.
Well, yes. Where was your war?
In South Africa.
Ah, yeah, I see. Oh, no. France, no bears there.
In West South Africa, the Germans tried to encroach on Rhodesia.
I see. No, France for me, yes. Lot of mud, some rats, and some Germans. That was really about it.
At least there was butter there.
It was good butter. Yeah, we got butter from the south of France, yes.
Yes, of course, you were supplies, weren't you? Supplies, yes. Very, very good at bringing us the morphine.
To your question there, my good barman, you mentioned that there's bear grease. There's a lot of bears around here, is that...
Well, yeah, of course, there's plenty of bears up there on the mountain. They do say that they've taken down a few unwary travellers over the years.
Yes, that slimy lawyer man, he seemed to be implying that there was a spate of murderous bears roaming, killing and maiming people, including my dear, dear brother.
Reginald, have another glass, Reginald.
You don't want bears roaming about. They don't come into town, these bears.
He said, well, they don't come into town. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's been known once in a while, particularly cold winter with not much scavenging to do, and a bear might come wandering down the main street, but no. Oh, look, here comes Black Tom. He'll be able to tell you everything. And you turn around as the chill wind blasts in through the open door, and you see standing there, outlined in the fading light, a large, broad-shouldered man. Very hard to
define how old he is. He could be anywhere between 30 and 50. His skin is weathered brown by the environment. He has coal black hair and dark eyes to match. And as he comes in, his eyes just scan the four of you with no discernible kind of reaction or expression, no signs of curiosity. He's just like coldly observing you. And he stamps his feet to shake the snow off his boots and then strides up to the bar. And he just leans in and he says, "Give me a double. It was a tough day today."
"There's a man who appears part bear himself."
And he looks at you. He says, "What's it to you, fella?"
"Just admiring a fellow woodsman. I'm a naturalist and a hunter myself. Would you be Black Tom?"
He says, "Maybe. Who wants to know exactly?"
"Sir, my name is Captain Salou, and I'm here with some compatriots. We're looking for a cabin in the woods where lately there had been a bear attack."
"Oh, is that right?" And he kind of runs his finger down his cheek, and you see that he's actually got a very old scar that runs all the way down from his temple down to his chin on the left side of his face. And he just seems to unconsciously just be fingering the scar.
"Did a bear do that?"
He says, "Oh, this? Hell no. I got this in my whiskey days in old Toronto town."
"Tell me, we have a bottle at our table. Would you come share it with us?"
"I won't say no, but if you see me reaching for a second, you stop me. I still have a taste for that liquor, but it don't have a taste for me sometimes, some days."
Come, sit with us. "Lady and gentlemen, this is Black Tom."
"Charmed, I'm sure."
"Hello, Mr. Black, or Mr. Tom, which do you prefer?"
"You can call me Tom."
"Oh, yeah, pleased to meet you, Tom."
"Pleased to meet you."
"Evening, Tom. Have a seat."
"You're a foreigner, ain't you?"
Yes, I'm from dear old Blighty."
"Where's that, then? Is that in the south?"
"England."
"Oh, England. England.
Across the big sea."
"England. Oh, old England. Old England."
Yes. "Oh, of course, this is... Oh, did you... Making a joke. Very good.
Oh, yeah, like that fella that got torn apart up on the mountain."
"Very like, yes. He was my brother."
"Oh, he was he? Oh, well, that was a pretty nasty piece of work up there."
"Well, he was a nasty piece of work, did you say?"
No, I don't mean him. I mean what happened to him."
Well, yes. A bear, apparently."
Maybe."
"Oh, you think it wasn't a bear? You see, people have been blaming bears an awful lot, and I'm beginning to get suspicious about it."
"Oh, they get a bad rep, I reckon. Bears are predictable. Oh, not like people. Bear, you know what a bear's gonna do. Bear's hungry, it's gonna wanna eat. If you're in the way of its food, it's gonna wanna eat you. But you stay out of their way, they'll stay out of your way. I don't reckon. Anyway, let's have that whiskey."
"I assume out here in the wilderness, people are often in the bear's way."
"Not if you know where you're walking, fella." "Oh, this time of year as well, doesn't seem likely to me. They spend most of their days hunkered down in a cave or somewhere. They don't go hunting this time of year."
"We heard that 14 hunters have been killed up on that mountain in the last little while."
"Maybe, but look, it's a dangerous place. You could fall, die of exposure, get lost up there. There's all kinds of ways to die up on a mountain."
"I'm looking to perhaps bring back a bear specimen to the museum in London. If I went up that mountain, do you think I would find one suitable for transport?"
As he sort of lowers himself into his chair to kind of start on the whiskey, you see him very ostentatiously sort of swing his jacket back and adjust this massive Bowie knife that he has in a scabbard just like on his belt. It's kind of like he twists it a bit so it doesn't poke him as he sits down, and he taps it a couple of times for good luck, and he says, "Look, a lot of people have died up on that mountain, that's for sure, Miss..."
"It's Miss Koenig."
"Miss Koenig. A lot of people have died up on that mountain, but it's well known for its mudslides in the spring, avalanches in winter, especially with all the mist up there, you see it coming, you see. And yeah, summer, spring, autumn, hungry bears for sure. Now, I don't think it's a good place to be any time of year up there on Black Devil, but I ain't afraid of it. You want to go up there and poke around, I'm happy to take you."
"Oh, that's very kind of you. Now, the other thing was music. Apparently someone's been up there playing music. Flutes, specifically."
"Well, where'd you hear that from, fella?"
"The lawyer man. He told me that. Yes. Cobb, I think his name was."
And he looks at you quizzically and he says, "You, now where'd you hear that from, miss?"
Well, I'm going to, like, lie and say the lawyer, because I didn't like the lawyer. And if it's going to come back on anyone, I'd like it to come back on him. So, yeah, Mr. Cobb, the lawyer, he said something about it.
He says, well, I got to admit, I did hear some strange sounds when I've been up there from time to time. Music and such from certain eastern slopes of the mountain. Well, she's not like no sound I heard afore. It's like the call of a loon, but not like any loon I ever heard.
A loon?
Yeah, that's a local bird. It makes a very distinctive call. Well, I don't know.
Right. Loon means something different.
I mean, maybe someone lives up there that we ain't never seen. Maybe a hermit or something. I did hear a laugh once in a while, you know, like a deep, throaty laugh. Oh, I don't know. Sounds a bit crazy, if you ask me. Maybe I was hearing things. It's easy to get turned around up there on that mountain.
Sounds very odd. Have you ever heard of anything like this, Miss Koenig?
I've heard the call of the loon before. I wouldn't say that it... I've never mistaken it for music, certainly. Do you get a lot of hermits in this area?
Well, I wouldn't say you get a lot of hermits. You'd have to really be at one with nature, I suppose you could say, if you were to live up there on that slope. Ain't much shelter from the elements.
It's a harsh life.
I met a hermit once. Yes, I had to go and sort him out. He had a gangrene in the leg, don't you know? Yes, he was called Hermann. Not a German, curiously. Yes, I had to go and amputate his leg. It was dreadful. I didn't have any painkillers with me, so I just had to use their whiskey and a belt and then sort it off. He was ever so grateful.
Oh.
Charming.
Life of a rural GP.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Who'd have thought Indeed. It? But I'll tell you what, pour me out one more. And I'll tell you, I suppose, the most shocking thing that ever happened up there on that mountain.
Oh, leans in. Do tell, shove.
So he drains it and he says, well, this must have been at least a decade ago, maybe 11 years back. There was a group of fellas came up from Providence, hunters, they said they were, but tell you what, their equipment was so new that you could see your reflection in their boots. They weren't no hunters, at least none that I'd ever classify in that way. Well, anyway, they came to grief up on the slopes of Black Devil Mountain. Seven of them I took up. Well, two were clawed to death by a bear, maybe a wildcat, either way. Oh, all I know is that they were clawed real good. Two others, they disappeared completely. And never been seen or heard from to this day. There's a fifth person, a Mr. Andrews. Well, he must have seen a bit too much up there in that mountain, because he went mad. Mr. Andrews, his hair turned white like the snow. By God, I mean, he's now locked up in some crazy house in Lewiston. At least I think that's where they sent him. I heard later that a sudden snowstorm separated the party, and I had to spend the next 2 days searching for survivors.
Heavens.
Didn't find any.
Would have been taken by some wildlife? Archibald, does wildlife take things away?
I can tell you from experience, they surely do. I can't tell you how many soft Europeans I've seen disappear in the bush. It happens more often than you think.
Yes, squidgy.
Squidgy.
Just desserts, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Black Tom kind of looks at you and rubs his chin and says, well, you say that, Mr. Seluce, if that's how you pronounce it.
Loose enough.
But I wouldn't exactly agree with you there. You know, a bear will eat its fill and leave the rest. They're not exactly efficient hunters, if you see what I mean. They'll go to a lot of effort and just chew half a man's head off and leave the rest.
Could it be the Bigfoot?
Oh, Mr. Goddard, Bigfoot. No.
Yes.
Even old Black Tom doesn't believe in a Bigfoot, and I've been living my whole life up in these hills.
What about the Mothman? I've heard of him as well.
He's south, sir.
Oh, right, okay. Jersey Devil?
As the name would suggest.
Yes. Oh, well. Yes, it was a very long boat journey. I've been reading some strange books.
And he says, well, look, it's getting a bit late now. Like I said, I'm very happy to show you up the mountain, but... it'll cost you.
Oh, well, I've just inherited some land. Perhaps we could come to an arrangement.
Certainly. Well, here's what I'll say. $50 down now, and then $5 a day.
Yeah, have I got $50?
I don't know if you do, actually.
Yeah, that's like $1,500 in today's money.
It is a significant amount of money. Let's see, Reginald. I think you're not particularly well off.
credit rating 40, spending level 2 quid, assets 400. No!
Okay, so actually, in 1920s, that would have been $10 spending level, and you're, yeah, actually, your ready cash on you is enough. You've got $80 in your billfold.
I am something of a man of means, and it is in my interest to see this through. I will gladly pay Black Tom to show us around and to outfit us for this journey.
Very kind of you, Frederick. Very kind of you.
You are indeed a man of means. You've got $75 a day walking around money.
Blimey!
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot. Oh, my goodness.
I did not leave Rhodesia a poor man. The details of that is best left hidden.
It involves diamonds, doesn't it?
And blood, I assume.
I've supplied most of the specimens you see in the major museums of London.
Ah.
But you've got enough between the two of you to cover it easily. So perhaps the two of you together can... Because I don't think old Martha is flush, is she?
Well, it wouldn't be very fair, given that we've employed her.
Literally hired me. I don't feel that I should pay my way.
Yeah. Well, you know, you could look at it two ways, that you put it on expenses because it's part of the investigation. But, well...
It is.
We've got enough. So
you've got enough.
Black Tom and... I mean, I don't know. We're not going to keep him for long.
But, you know, two of you, you put together $50, and he sits there very ostentatiously counting it out, bill by bill. And he says, well, I suppose it's all there. Well, I've got some errands to run tomorrow morning, but in the afternoon, well, I'll take you up there.
Shall we meet here at, say, 1 p.m.?
Sounds right to me. Now, have you got the right kind of clothing, equipment? You don't look exactly prepared for this kind of business, except for you, sir, he says, to Selu.
No, I just have this lovely pair of brogues from a Mornington Crescent shoe shop. You go in the northern line, but not on a Tuesday.
And he says, well, you'll be wanting something a bit stiffer than that for the climb and something a bit warmer up top.
Dare say. Like a fur coat or something.
He says, well, you can go to the general store. Mac McDougall there, he'll sort you out.
Oh, very good. And do you think this fine establishment has rooms for us?
Here?
Yes.
Well, they've probably got a couple of bunk rooms upstairs.
Slumming it.
They'll take care of you here. And then he says, 1 o'clock tomorrow. He says, and thank you for not letting me have that second bottle.
You're welcome.
Our pleasure, I'm sure.
The second bottle will be at the top of the mountain.
And he heads on out of the saloon and gives you a backward glance as he leaves. And I can't believe it. We've been playing an hour and a half and none of you have made a roll yet. So
nope.
Let's have our first roll of the game. So anyone who wants to could make a psychology roll.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, look at that. Actually, I think we have all three of you are somewhat capable in that area. So you are. You're all very, very acute observers of psychology.
Two hards and a normal.
Yeah, two hards and a regular success. And you all get the very distinct sense that Black Tom is hiding something from you as he leaves. That backward glance, almost sizing you up or trying to get a handle on you as he leaves.
Well, that $50 I don't think we'll ever see again.
Well, I mean, we're paying him for services rendered, but I don't really get the feeling that he could actually count to 50, so...
Well, valid.
Well, we do need a guide who knows the area.
Yes, we're not hiring him for maths, I suppose.
What are the chances that that is our bear?
He is a big man, right enough. I mean, I'm not small, but he's very large.
He's a large man and scarred. He seems very confident in himself.
You do have a type.
Yes. I don't know. I think he knows a little bit more about those deaths than he's saying, but...
I get that impression. Yes. There's an air of violence about the man.
Well, he's a woodsman. I would hope so. It's a job requirement. But I'd be on our toes if I were us. Which I am.
Yes, yeah. I think we should be cautious of Mr. Tom.
Well...
In fact, everyone here is a bit weird. Is this, like, normal? I mean, I know it's backwards and stuff, but the yokels here are very, well, yokely.
Well, I will admit, as a somewhat native of this general area, we are something of a chilly people. We can be a bit reserved. Maine is very remote and doesn't get a lot of traffic from more metropolitan regions. So...
Yes.
Yes.
I've been somewhere like that. Yes, Scotland. Very like that.
Yeah, actually, yes. Yes, quite right. But these people are much more cold than even I am really used to.
Okay, so they're not keen on foreigners?
No.
Or outsiders, even?
No, and apparently someone from Vermont is a foreigner, so...
Oh, yes, it's like that. We have areas like that back home. They're from away, which could be the next village, London, Mars. It's like, I think it's the same everywhere in these rural places.
Maybe it's Martians.
Oh, maybe.
Wouldn't that be exciting?
This does remind me very much of the first time I set foot in Matabele land, and the locals there were very much the same way.
Well, you did come with a big gun, I'm assuming, so...
It was a requirement, that is for sure.
No.
I fear before this adventure is out, you'll be glad that I had this big gun.
I'm glad you have it now, good sir.
Yes, I have this! Starts waving his Webley revolver about his head.
I'd like to ask you to put that away, Mr. Goddard.
Yes.
It's somewhat valuable. I'm not necessarily worried about wild beasts, but...
Yeah, okay.
And seeing you waving the pistol around, the barman comes over and he says, I think maybe we'll call it an evening now, ladies and gents.
I think that's wise.
Yes, don't want any accidents or anything like that.
Yeah, that's fine. Whiskey and guns don't mix, eh? Nudge.
Do you have rooms available? Bunks? Cots?
Well, I suppose so. How many nights will you be needing them for?
Probably at least one or two.
Have you got many bookings in the near future?
Well, no, but it's not exactly our main line of business here. We serve corned beef and whiskey. That's our main line.
We'll start with two, as Miss Koenig says.
Well, all right.
She is alone.
We haven't got much in the way of facilities. We'll send up a couple of bowls of lukewarm water for you to wash in. And it'll have to do.
Thank you.
More than adequate.
So you spend a rather chilly night in the attic rooms of the saloon, and you drift off to sleep with the sound of the wind howling. Or is that the piping of flutes coming down off the mountain? It's hard to tell. But you wake up bright and early the next morning. Another bowl of lukewarm water is sent up for you to refresh yourselves with. And before 1 o'clock, you've got some time to poke around the town a bit and, of course, buy some equipment or anything you might need from the general store. So what do you wish to do in this hotbed of this hive of activity?
Roger's later. Do you think he'll mind if we go and do the shopping without him?
I think that's wise, yes. I'd definitely like to get at least a pair of Wellingtons and warm coat, and I'm going to expense it to my boss, Mr. Swan.
Oh, yes, very good.
That seems like a sound plan. So you head over to the general store, and yeah, they've got pretty much everything you might expect to find in a small town general store up in the mountains. They've got warm clothing. There are some firearms, of course. There's provisions, camping stoves, fuel.
Bear traps.
Bear traps, yep. You could buy a bear trap.
I would like to purchase a bear trap.
That's very wise. Bears. Have they got like a proper sort of like winter cowboy outfit with like a hat and chaps and stuff? Because, you know.
The beaver fur hat with the tail.
Yeah.
I'm afraid, Mr. Goddard, it's a very large country. We're sort of in the wrong geographical region for chaps.
Oh dear. Oh well. You see, we don't get a lot of cowboy films. That's all we've got, really.
Fair enough.
But you do see a magnificent bearskin coat.
Oh, that is wonderful. I can pretend to be the bear. I love this. Grab the bearskin coat, all excited.
And when you go to grab it, there's a couple of old codgers in the store. They don't seem to be working there. They just seem to be hanging around. It seems to be what they do. And when you go to grab it, one of them mutters,
oh, goddamn fool, going up and up with a bearskin coat.
You know, just kind of muttering underneath his breath, hardly audible.
You say that, sir, but when the bear comes for me, it will think I am one of it. One of it. Yes, one of it. And it will leave me alone. Yes, it will.
He looks at you and he says, what kind of a fool thing to say is that? That bear would smell you coming a mile off.
No, because I'd smell like a bear, because I'm dressed like one.
Well, you better not wash for the next month, mister, if that's what you want to smell like.
Well, the boat wasn't very luxurious.
You see, bears, they can smell soap on a man. Quite like it, you see. They like the taste of a freshly washed human.
Oh, you're joshing with me, aren't you? This is local humour. Yes, it is local humour, isn't it, Miss Koenig?
What passes for humour, I suppose. I'm trying on a very large and unfashionable coat right now.
and the other codger that seems to be even older. So the one that spoke first was probably about 75, and there's a even older one, probably about 90, at least 90 years old. He's very skinny and scrawny, and he's actually sitting on a stool with his bleary, sort of rheumy eyes. He's just kind of looking at the three of you. Doesn't say anything. He's just kind of gazing at you with a look of, I don't know, certainly he doesn't seem particularly pleased to see you. Let's put it that way.
Excuse me, old man. I approach the one that's sitting down. Do you know anything about this mysterious music from the hills?
He says,
oh, the music from the hills.
Yes.
I ain't heard much these last 20 years. My hearing ain't so good, you see.
Maybe you need an ear trumpet.
What's that?
Ear. Oh, never mind. I just ignore him.
He says, you look kind of familiar.
Brother.
Brother? Oh.
Yeah. Make bear oppression.
You're the brother of that fool Goddard?
Yes.
Oh, he died, you know, he died.
I've got my bear coat on, making sort of bear impressions. Sort of like, yes, bear, apparently.
No, ain't no bear. Oh, ain't no bear. Oh, not nothing natural. What tore up that fool?
What did?
Oh, ain't been a killer bear up in these here parts for 30 years. No matter what folks tell you.
What was it?
Oh, nothing natural. That's all. Nothing natural.
Nothing natural? A machine? A supernatural creature?
I don't know anything about that. All I know is ain't no bear.
Was it the devil, sir?
Devil?
I heard tell the devil lives in this hill.
And when you say that, the other fella turns around and he says,
what do you know about the devil up on that mountain?
I've heard a rumor that he lives there. I mean, it's in the name.
Well, I tell you, it's a... I don't know where you get your information from, but, well, I don't know.
The map.
He says, you may want to talk to our local preacher man.
Well.
Testifying Cooter, they call him.
Cooter?
Testifying Cooter.
Testifying Cooter, yeah.
And what denomination is that, sir?
Well, I don't know. He's some kind of religious nut. But anyway, he talks about the devil living up on that mountain. Oh, I don't know if it's no devil, but. Certainly ain't nothing I can put my finger on. I had some strange experiences up there myself.
Did you?
Bigfoot?
Maybe. He says, it was many years ago. Well, I was a mite foolish back then. Maybe I didn't have a sensible head on than me them as I do now. But, well, I were hunting rabbit up in that mountain. Well, near about sunset, I began hearing what I thought be a lady crying and sobbing. But it got louder. I could tell it weren't that at all. It were music. Like maybe a whistle or one of them pipes or something. Only more lonelier, if you understand what I'm saying. It was like the crying of a wounded animal or something like that. Well, I thought to myself, there were no sound for a Christian man to be seeing what were making it. So I hired myself back down off in that mountain. Ain't never gone back these 40 years. That's all I know. But old Cooter... If you can get him out of one of his stupors, well, he goes up there sometimes. But not me. No way. No way, miss. No way.
Cooter, you said?
Testifying Cooter, yeah.
Testifying Cooter. Strong name if I've ever heard one.
He sounds a character.
I can tell you from experience that quite often the wilderness breeds devils. Quite often these religious men who come to the wilderness, they will create stories around them, but it's a bit like painting the target after you find the arrow, if you know what I'm saying.
Ah, yes. Chickens and eggs.
Very, very wise philosophy. And yeah, so basically you can just buy whatever equipment you want from the store. All right, well, look at that.
We've been to a tavern, and we've just bought supplies. So we're basically playing D&D right now.
Yeah, we are basically playing D&D. I did say it
was... There was no fight in the tavern, though, so...
No.
This is true.
I'm disappointed. I'm expecting that next time. No, this is all preamble. We'll get to the slaughter at some point soon.
Oh, dear, I like that, yes. No, that was really good fun. Enjoyed that.
Won't you spare me over till another year? Well, what is this that I can't see with those cold hands taking hold of me?
It's thank you time again. So, first of all, thank you, as usual, to Sirenscape for providing the amazing sound beds, sound effects, and music for the podcast. Also, of course, this podcast, it would exist, but it wouldn't have the same joy and energy it does have if it wasn't for the Patreon backers. I love you all. I thank you all. You make my day, my month, my year. And at whatever level you're backing, I'm just so, so grateful. And thank you for helping us keep going. If you want to show your support for the show, please go to patreon.com/grizzlypeaks, where you can join at a variety of levels, which will give you early access, exclusive bonus episodes, and even the chance to play in one of our invitation-only Patreon backer games. And they've been awesome.
Death, I come to take the soul, leave the body and leave it cold, to drop the flesh off of the frame. The earth and worm both have a claim. Oh, death. Oh, death. Won't you spare me over till another year? My mother came to my bed, placed a cold towel upon my head. My head is warm, my feet are cold, death is a moving upon my soul.